Welcome to the Aquarimax audio show with Russ and Kelly. We provide information on all kinds of aquarium-related topics.
This is episode 173, recorded August 7th, 2013.
Greetings, Aquarimaxers!
Hello, hello!
It's been a good while, hasn't it?
It has. We've had lovely interviews, though.
We have. They were very well received by both by us, of course, and by many of the listeners who have sent in comments
yes,
about it.
Yes, we've gotten some very nice feedback. So
yeah, which we'll talk about now, but or we'll talk about this episode. But we need to just since we haven't actually talked to you very much directly over the past few weeks, we have an extra little greeting there. So there you go. We moved during that time.
We did.
Which, with the interviews, were pretty well timed because we kind of had them just a couple of weeks before we moved, and then we released them while we were moving. Made life a little bit easier. So if you hear some funny noises, it's because we haven't exactly soundproofed our living room yet.
Yeah, well, so. And that's actually not going to be possible because the ceiling's very high and the floor is tile and it's echoey.
I was thinking of getting some of that spray insulation, just spraying every surface in the living room with it.
Oh yeah, we spray it on the couch and
it'll be softer.
Chairs and that's a brilliant idea. I like that.
So please bear with us.
I'm sure the landlord will be happy about that too.
We get the audio fixed up. Once we get, we'll figure out how to improve the acoustics a little bit in here. But for now, it might sound a little funny.
So we sound like we're in a shower again. Just go get your rubber ducky.
So who we got lined up today?
We have Tony from New York and Mick in Carnforth in the UK and Jason in Cape Breton, Nova Scotia.
Cool.
A place with very cool music. Not that that has anything to do with fish, but I just have to throw that out there. And Elliot in Manchester in the UK and Bob in Boston and Tom in Provo.
So a couple of veteran contributors and a couple of new contributors.
Yes, that's
Excellent, a good mix. Welcome,
all. And I have to also say, I have a cold again, so if my voice sounds funny, it's more than just the room. So, sorry. Okay. Hopefully I don't cough on you guys, but I don't think germs travel through podcasts, so you're probably safe.
That's true.
We're going to start with Tony, who sent us a few voice messages.
Yeah.
So we will go ahead and listen to those.
Let's listen to the first one.
Hello, it's Tony from New York here. I wanted to thank you for having Diana Wahlstatt back on your show. I think it is a benefit to all of us in the aquarium hobby to be able to get a little more in-depth with some of her articles and knowledge. Particularly interesting, your discussion on macrobacteriosis. I think that it would definitely go a long way toward solving some questions and or concerns that fish keepers have. I also thought it was particularly interesting that she discussed some of the advances in knowledge by those that are working with zebras. I once watched some zebra danios, and it made me think back to that time and maybe solve the mystery in the fish keeping history of Tony from New York. Anyway, thanks very much, and I look forward to your next show and to Diana's next appearance. Thanks, Diana, for appearing on the show.
Tony, we're so glad you enjoyed it and that it was useful information for you. We always enjoy talking to Diana. She is a delight.
She's a lot of fun, and she gives great information, of course.
Yes.
And, who knows, maybe those Danios, there's a connection there. But whether or no, your comments echo those of many other listeners who have mentioned that they were appreciative of Diana's Diana's interviews. As we
quite a few people said that they really enjoyed it. So.
Okay, now let's listen to Tony's next one.
Message number two.
Hey Russ, happy belated birthday! It's Tony from New York again, and I wanted to say congratulations on the Corys. That sounds really exciting. I can't wait to hear more about them. Hey, also want to give a shout-out to Mick. Hey, wow, I really enjoyed your content on the Aquarimax page. I love looking at the axes. Awesome. And, wow, don't they jump out if you don't have a cover on there? I was just curious. It looks like a really efficient way to raise them. And, wow, those are weird little guys. Thank you very much for sending the pics. Anyway, see you next time. Tony from New York, signing off.
Thank you. That was very sweet to send birthday wishes.
Yes, thank you indeed. I am appreciative of the birthday wishes, and the Corys are doing well. I've enjoyed.
Okay.
They moved well, and they're right by the bed. So when I wake up, sometimes I look over and see the Corys swimming around in a little school.
Did you tell them what's underneath the Corys? I guess that's a little bit off topic.
Slightly off topic, but...
it's kind of fun, though.
Yeah, I guess we could talk about that. It's sort of related to what Mick was talking about in sort of a bizarre way. But Mick's axes, I'm sure Mick will appreciate that. And maybe he can answer Tony's questions about axolotl husbandry outdoors. About whether or not they need to be covered. But yeah, we should at some point talk about our vivarium. I think I've talked about it in passing. But
you may have mentioned that you were going to set
it up. That was constructing one, yeah. But anyway, we did get our morning geckos. And if you go to the Aquarimax YouTube channel, you can see the video of the release of the geckos into the vivarium.
With some interesting comments by her little girls.
About her cat and random things
yeah.
going on. So, but anyway, it's kind of fun to see the little juvenile geckos, if you like that sort of thing. So there you go. And thank you, Tony. Let's move on to the next message.
Yep, one more message from Tony.
Hello, it's Tony from New York calling. I just started listening to your Jim Carmack interview, which is really amazing. I'm so glad that you've got a show dedicated to cichlids. Really fascinating. I've got a couple of things for you today. First, I just wanted to comment. Hey, anytime you feel like doing a show about stingrays in the home aquarium, I think that would be really interesting just to hear some facts and some points of interest. Really interesting stuff. Other than that, I wanted to ask, if I have a little aquarium here and the light comes on, does that keep my fish up at night? That's all from me. This is Tony from New York, signing off.
Well, I'm glad you enjoyed Jim Carmack's interview. Once again, several listeners have responded saying that they really enjoyed those. And we could probably do a show. If Jim's available and willing, we could do a show on stingrays sometime.
I want stingrays.
That would be a lot of fun. Yeah, yeah. Kelly's fascinated by stingrays.
I love stingrays.
Who's not fascinated by stingrays, right?
They feel like silk.
Yeah, they look so velvety and stuff. Mm-hmm. They're amazing. So that would be very cool. And it's been fun to hear from Tony. We, as you know, we love it when people send us audio contributions to the show, so that's cool. Thank you for doing that. And thank you for all your comments, and hopefully those to whom your comments are directed other than us will be able to respond soon. Okay, and who's next?
Mick in Carnforth. And he says, we have had a serious heat wave here lately, and I've had a really difficult job keeping the food cultures from crashing in the heat. Infusoria and Walter worms starting to ferment rather than culture, and white worms hunkering down for cover. Not sure it would make such a good wine either.
Probably not.
Probably not. That would be really gross. And Mick sent the cutest video. I love this. I know it's a very tenuous aquatic link, but here's a video of our African pygmy hedgehog cooling off in the pop-up paddling pool yesterday. Okay, it's not a fish, but it is in water.
Right, I think that's good enough.
I think so too. And we will put the link up. It's really cute.
You should have heard Kelly when she watched it. She thought it was the greatest thing.
I think there was some kind of squeal that came out of the wall. Something like that.
So you should check it out. Definitely, it's an organism swimming in water. What more could you want, right?
A cute organism
right.
swimming in water.
Right.
And plus, Mick, your daughter's talking now.
We presume that's your daughter.
Well, yes, I would assume so. Mm-hmm. But they don't stay the same. They just keep growing.
Yeah. Oh, there was one thing I wanted to say about the worms. I did send him an email suggesting maybe try the ice block method with the white worms.
And what's the ice block method?
Basically, you get a container, like a plastic bottle,
uh-huh.
with frozen water, and you throw it in the freezer, you know, and maybe a quart or so, a liter, something like that, size bottle, and you freeze the water in the freezer, then once it's frozen, you stick it into the soil, kind of hunker it down in the soil of the white worms,
mm-hmm.
and then the white worms can find the area where they're most comfortable. And then you have a couple of those in rotation going all the time, and then whatever sort of heat wave that you are enduring, they have a thermal gradient and they can migrate to the part of the soil that's comfortable.
Well, that's a good idea.
And it's not my idea, but I suggested that to Mick, and he said he might give that a try, so maybe he has by now.
That's a good idea.
And it's something in places, climates like this, unless you keep your white worms in a refrigerator, you need to do that all summer.
All the time.
Yeah. Like, once they get past the 60, about mid-60s Fahrenheit, they're uncomfortable.
I wonder what heat wave Wernicke is considered.
Right, it might be different from what we consider heat wave here, but at any rate...
Probably they're not up to 105.
Probably not. But that technique will tend to help, so hopefully that does.
It's a good idea. Okay, so we have Jason from Cape Breton in Nova Scotia.
New contributor.
Yes, welcome Jason. Ooh, jinx. You have to buy me ice cream now.
Okay.
He says, I am thinking about changing from gravel to sand for my 12-gallon fluval edge. However, I wanted to get your opinion. I'm interested in white sand if I'm able to find it. Currently, I have four quarries and a dwarf gourami. Will the quarries enjoy the sand, or would you think that they would prefer gravel? I had sand in a 55-gallon cichlid tank, and I loved it. So, what do you say to Jason?
Well, quarries in general do like sand, as long as the sand is fairly smooth. You know, rough sand, sharp sand, can be damaging for them. It can damage their whiskers. They spend a lot of time on the bottom. They spend a lot of time digging with their snouts down into the bottom, and their barbels can be damaged if it's sharp glass. Some of the sands out there are actually, to my understanding, are byproducts of the glass industry.
Those would be sharp.
Can be fairly sharp on a small scale, but so you're not going to reach your hand in there and cut yourself, but it could wear away at the quarry's barbels and so on. There's some debate over whether sand actually does it or not, but if, as long as you have a smooth type of sand, that wouldn't increase the pH too much, and you can find those.
How do you know if your sand is smooth when you're buying it? Does it have, like, a gradient or something listed on the package of this is how smooth or how not smooth the sand is?
Well, there are a couple of sands out there that you can get. There's one that's particularly fine. I think it's called, I can't remember the name now, but it's a very, very fine grade of sand that is used for, it can be used for cichlids and so on. It doesn't alter the pH. And I've seen it used, for example, in tanks with Tanganyikan shell dwellers.
The stuff that looks kind of sparkly, they showed me, like
moon something. Oh, there's Tahitian moon sand, which I've used.
Maybe that's what I'm thinking.
But this has some other name, and I wish I could recall it right now. But anyway, there are a couple of commercially available aquarium sands out there. As long as you find one that's smooth, some of the Carib Sea produces a number of different types of sand. I think it might be them that produces the one I'm thinking of. Very, very fine grade. And a lot of times on the container, it'll tell, you know, on the bag, it'll say, this buffers pH or this doesn't buffer pH. With quarries, typically, unless you have really soft water, you wouldn't want to use, you know, buffering pH because it'll bring the pH up too high. They don't typically like that too much, although a lot of them are adaptable. It kind of depends on the species too and the locale. But anyway, if they'll really enjoy fine sand as long as it's smooth, to get back to where I was talking about. And they will be fine as long as the filter is not affected by the sand. If it gets, they will kick up the sand to some degree, and if it gets kicked up into the filter, it can damage the impeller rather severely. A couple of grains of sand can just make a hash out of an impeller, especially if it's, you know, slightly coarser grain sand. So I would say you'll need to probably make some provisions in a fluval 12-gallon, I think he said, to protect the filter intake, maybe with an open cell foam block, and just put a slice through the middle.
One of those mesh bags or something?
A mesh bag might work depending on the grade of the sand and the grade of the bag, but I would say maybe just put some open cell foam, a block of it, slice an X into it partway through the foam and slide it over the intake, and that should protect it from the sand fairly well.
And when he says white sand, is that a brand or a kind of sand?
I think he's just thinking of the color. No more.
Oh, he had it capitalized, so I didn't know if that was, you know, like...
I think that's all he's
talking
about.
Something official.
But I wish I could remember that type of sand, but I trying to think of, but it's very, very fine grained.
Okay.
And that would be something that would be appropriate from the corridor's point of view.
Okay, thank you, Jason. Shall we take our break now?
Hello, this is Ken Jones of the Prince of Pawns and Pet Tech Podcasts, and you're listening to one of my favorites, the Aquarimax Show.
Now there are more ways than ever to be a part of Aquarimax.
Okay, we are back, and we're going to hear from Bob in Boston. And he has actually quite a few nice things to say, which Russ was reluctant to mention all, because he doesn't like to toot his own horn, but I can toot his horn for him via Bob. How about that? Is that okay? That's okay. Let's go ahead. Bob says, a few weeks ago I wrote, there's no one on the internet with your knowledge and interview skills. What I meant to say was, there's no one on the internet with your knowledge of aquarium science and interview skills. But now I'm starting to wonder if maybe I had it right the first time. Really, no words for the last two interviews. Not that there isn't other great stuff online. Amazonas Magazine and TFH, I'm assuming it's Tropical Fish Hobbies, yeah. To name a couple, but you are the standard when it comes to aquarium podcasts. The online aquarium community has been in need of a scientist who can relate to lay people, and you're definitely it. So this is me agreeing with Bob, and that's for us blushing. But you can't see it because it's just audio, so I'm just, you know, describing the scene for you. See, he's not even saying anything because he's a ballast. Okay, and I love what else he says. Bob says, not exactly sure what Kelly's role is, except to say that the podcast would suck without her. They just wouldn't work.
I can agree with you there.
I love that. I laughed my face off when Russ told me about that he said that the first time. I think my role is the official plucky comic relief. How about that? Because I don't know what I'm talking about. I'm here. You're the straight man, and I'm the crooked woman. This is actually, Russ and I have talked about this before because it's really funny. Because in all other walks of life, Russ is the one making everybody laugh and being goofy and silly, and I'm the one keeping some semblance of order. And so we find it very funny that in this venue, it's reversed. So. But thank you very much, Bob. It's very kind of you. Okay, so he goes on to say, the timing on the Wallstead interview was perfect because Jim Carmark is bringing me some Altum Angels next week, and the tank situation is not good. I recently lost several opistos that were placed in my rigorously sterile discus breeding tank, and I also lost about 100 juvenile discus, half-dollar size, in an equally sterile grow-out tank. The more I cleaned the tanks, the worse it got, and nobody could diagnose the problem until you broadcast the Wallstead interview. I call it the Wallstead Epiphany. I think that's a good name for it.
It is. Sounds like a name for a book, actually.
Yeah. And what can I say about the interview with Jim Carmark? It was the Gone with the Wind of aquarium podcasts. What's interesting is he gave a presentation last month on roughly the same topic, collecting in South America, and they were completely different. I could listen to him all day. Thank you for two great interviews.
Yeah, he's got some
very interesting
amazing
stories.
Experiences,
yeah.
And a lot of good information to share, and does it in an entertaining way. So.
But the picture that he was talking about when he's got the eyes glowing in the back of him, that's what stuck in my head.
Yeah, the crocodile behind him.
Oh, creepy. Not for the faint of heart, as I believe he said.
Yes.
As a result of the Wallstead interview, I've decided to follow her recommendations, including adding UV filters. Oh, look, see, this is my other role. I read the emails. I'm like Lieutenant, what's her name? Uhura?
Uhura.
Yeah,
Uhura.
I tell you what the computer's saying. I need a little red Star Trek dress and an earpiece.
Okay.
Okay. Maybe we should have a competition of define Kelly's role. Okay, sorry, I'll focus now. That's not my role, focusing, but I'll try it. As a result of the Wallstead interview, I've decided to follow her recommendations, including adding UV filters. Here's a link to some good info on UVs, and he's got a link on there we can put up.
We'll put up on the show page. Mm-hmm.
Granted, this site sells the UV filters they recommend, but they also sell the cheaper brands and strongly recommend them for lesser tanks. I checked out what they had to say about other aquarium equipment, and they seem impartial. Here's a very brief summary of what they said about UV filters. A tank turnover rate of 4 times per hour using 1 watt per 10 gallons of water kills most bacteria and parasites. In other words, 300 gallons of water pumped through a 30-watt bulb could handle a 75-gallon tank. Half of that exposure, an 8-watt bulb with 150 gallons and 75-gallon tank, would kill only bacteria, but that might be all you need.
Right. Because larger parasites take longer dwell time up near the light. But if you're not worried about larger parasites, then...
If you're just trying to kill off the bacteria. Mm-hmm. And he says, some other points. Attaching a large sponge pre-filter helps the UV and doubles as a great biological filter. Construction of the UV filter, particularly the distance of the bulb to the water, the bulb itself, and the amount of time, or dwell time as you just called it, the water is exposed to the bulb is critical. There's also some fascinating information on redox balance, which I won't get into here. So what's redox balance?
Oh, that's reduction and oxidation of... Basically, it's talking about the balance of electrons and stuff, but we shouldn't get into that here either.
Okay. Well, that made me fall asleep, maybe.
Maybe.
By the way, my surviving juvenile discus were placed in my 20,000-gallon summer pond and are doing fine, but I'm not sure how I'm going to get them out. My breeding pair of discus most likely carry mycobacteria, but they seem to have built up a tolerance for it, and their babies survive as long as they're feeding off.
So that's interesting.
That's very interesting. Yeah. You can build up a resistance.
And also that if they're feeding up off the parents, they seem to be okay. I wonder if there's some probiotics involved.
That's what I was just wondering. I wonder if they have some kind of dosing probiotics that would help with all of this.
Well, probiotics are supposed to help, as Diana said.
She did see that. That's probably why it's in my head. Huh?
Yeah, but I'm wondering if here it's a natural sort of probiotic. You know, just to cite an example from another species, a terrestrial species, rabbits, okay? Mm-hmm. Baby rabbits can't digest the rough types of food like the heavy vegetable matter and hay and that sort of thing very well unless, well, especially the wet foods very well unless they are kept with their parents, because they actually get inoculated from their parents with the bacterium from the parents' feces.
So they eat some of the leavings from their parents, and that gives them the happy bacteria in their gut to digest.
And they can build them up on their own, they eventually do, but it takes longer. So you have to be careful with the baby ones until they get those bacterial colonies built up in their gut flora, basically. And I'm wondering if something similar happens if the babies, if the discus feed off the parents, if they're getting inoculated by these probiotic bacteria.
That's an interesting thing to look into, though. Maybe Bobby, I don't know if you can see what's going on, but see what kind of interaction is going on between the babies and the parents if they're nibbling on something.
Well, we know that the babies nibble on the parents extensively.
On the actual...
Slime, on their,
well, see, there you go. That makes sense then, yeah.
So, who knows? Mm-hmm.
Interesting stuff. So, thank you, Bob, and
yes,
we will put the link up for people to explore.
Yes, I think, as I've mentioned before, I have a UV filter based on Diana's recommendations, and I think it's a great thing to have.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and our last contributor for the day is also a new one. This is Elliot from Manchester in the UK.
Welcome, Elliot.
So welcome, Elliot, yes. And he says, hi, Russ and Kelly. Though I'm more towards the saltwater side of the hobby, several years of nano-reefing, I find myself listening to your podcast for quite some time now. I thought I'd write in with a few questions, but before that, I would just like to say that your shows are very entertaining and informative. You guys are doing a great job. Keep up the good work. Thank you very much.
Thank
you. Okay, down to business. Now that I've finished university and got myself a stable job and income, I was thinking of taking a fresh turn in the hobby. And he says, lame pun, sorry, but we say, the lamer the better.
Everyone is giving a laugh with the pun.
Right. Says, I was thinking of looking into keeping a freshwater aquarium for a change. I'm not overly excited about the plants, but several setups caught my attention. The one that caught my eye was keeping Oscars, or fish with personality and character. Oscars are called the puppies of the aquarium world. Can you share some of your experience with Oscars, if any? Highlighting some of the basics and keeping them would be nice, too. And what other fish would also have good potentials in being an interactive fish with a personality?
Wow.
That's a good long list.
It is. That might have to be even for another show, but I can give some brief experiences with Oscars. I would say that The only Oscar I kept was a long time ago. It was my brother's Oscar, but I was taking care of it along with him. And this was when we were kids. It did have a lot of personality. They do follow you around like a puppy dog. But I would say that, in general, a lot of cichlids can tend to have a lot of personality. And it depends on what you're doing. If you have a big tank full of, like, Mbuna cichlids, they'll certainly come up and beg for food. But if you have just one cichlid in a tank, get a cichlid that tends to be more solitary and keep it in a tank, it'll pay a lot more attention to you than if you have a community of, you know, 15, 18, 30 cichlids in a tank. But most of the cichlids do have a lot of personality. So I would recommend that. If you're looking for something smaller, bettas actually are big on personality. A lot of personality in a small package.
Do you like clown loaches too, for their personality?
I do. Clown loaches have a lot of personality, but you need to keep them in groups.
Yes, that's true.
And they require a lot of space. Mm-hmm. There are some of the cichlids you can get a 30-gallon tank, even a 20, depending on the species. Just keep one in there and they can do fine. The clown loaches, you need to have
five of them,
and you need to have a really big tank. So, but it's true, they have a lot of personality too. So that's a good one.
If anybody else wants to give a shout out for their favorite personality fish, feel free to write in.
Right. Yeah, that's a good way to approach it. And we can maybe talk a little bit more in depth on those in a future show.
Mm-hmm. He also says, on a separate note, I came across something called aquaponics. This is where the nutrients and waste from fish are used to grow plants and food. This not only filters the water, but also gives you food. Talk about two birds with one stone. The concept of using plants to remove nutrients from the water is practiced quite often in the saltwater aquariums in the form of refugiums, but never food. Is aquaponics a common thing in the freshwater side? If so, how would I go about doing it? I would definitely like to give this a go should I get into freshwater.
Well, there is the concept of the veggie filter that's done in freshwater fairly frequently, where you have exposed plants, plants exposed to CO2 in the atmosphere that grow and remove nutrients from the water, and of course, even aquatic ones do that same, as, of course, Elliot knows. But the purpose of adding plants for the main purpose of removing nutrients rather than growing them ornamentally with this kind of a side effect that they do that they remove the nutrients, is also fairly well practiced. But aquaponics is something else. Again, we did do an episode in which we discussed it somewhat at length, and to my chagrin, I realized I didn't tag it correctly, so it doesn't show up when I search aquaponics.
Do you remember the number?
I don't remember.
Oh, goodness gracious.
But we will have to do one. I'm thinking, actually, it's percolating in my mind because aquaponics are so fascinating, and I have read
Russ is really into this subject,
extensively,
actually,
on it.
We haven't really had the space to do a whole lot with it.
Yeah, I've done some small-scale things with it, like the tank at work with, with the pothos plants.
But as far as
well.
We haven't, grown tomatoes with it.
No, but...
Does it do some of that?
I don't know if it's aquaponics.
Is there somebody that...
I think we have some listeners that do. Yeah. But if we do have some listeners that do and you want to talk more extensively about it, let's do an interview. Or if not, there is an author that I recently read, great book on aquaponics. I would like to interview her.
Let's do it.
We should look her up.
Okay, stingrays and aquaponics.
Yeah.
Let's have a stingray tank. Well, no, we can't do that. It's not freshwater.
Oh, there are freshwater stingrays.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, see, we'll get freshwater stingrays and we'll grow tomatoes and basil.
There you go.
Russ is looking at me funny.
Okay. So, we'll see if we can set up an interview about aquaponics specifically, the whole thing.
Yeah, that would be really cool.
That would be fun. Mm-hmm. In the meantime, if anybody remembers or happens to know which episode that is in which we talked about aquaponics for a while, please let us know, and then we can let Elliot know. Before we end, Carlos in New York has some fishy updates for us. He's working on his marble half moon placat line. A bit of splendens that he mentioned when he talked to us when we interviewed him last on how to breed bettas, and he's having some good results with that. And that, I love half moon black cats.
They're lovely.
And we got some nice marbles out of our spawn that we did. Probably not as nice as his because he's a lot more experienced at it, and he's got some excellent stock, but still, they're fun. He says he's got two litters of albino bushy nose plecos, numbering 100 little ones total.
Wow.
And his best surprise was finding betta falks fry in the tank with the parents.
And those are?
And I believe those are mouth breeders.
Cool.
And they're, you know, wild type betas. They're not. They haven't been selectively bred for color and finnage and stuff. And they are attractive fish, though. And he says he's taken about a dozen or so of them out of the tank so the mother doesn't eat them. And he's going to try to send some
pigs. Do they do that after they get to a certain age or something?
They sometimes, you know, it can happen. Sometimes the mother, the father will protect them, the mother will eat them, or different things can happen depending on different species. So he's going to try to send some pigs, too.
Oh, good. Didn't we have something from Tom? He was on the list, but he wasn't. There wasn't a comment down at the bottom of the list.
Oh, we do have something from Tom. I just didn't get it in there. So maybe we'll have to cover that next week.
We're just about out of time. Okay, we'll get Tom in there next week.
Next week. And in the meantime,
may the fish
be with you.
Thank you for listening to this edition of the Aquarimax Audio Show. For additional episodes, please visit aquarimax.com. For comments and or questions that may be featured on an upcoming podcast, leave a message at 801-477-0629 or email us at info@aquarimax.com.